रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पतये नमः. किष्किंधा कांड चैप्टर नंबर 30. रामा इज एंग्री एट सुग्रीव. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. द फोर रेनी सीजंस पास्ड ओवर द हेड ऑफ रामा लाइक फोर इटर्निटीज थैंक्स टू द पैशन एंड ग्रीफ दैट कैंकर्ड हिज सोल. The skies were clear and cloudless. The queen of night rode high in the heavens in spotless splendor. The autumn nights were polished white, as it were, with moonlight. Sugriva would not come forth from his palace. Sugriva lay supine and spiritless, a slave to wine and women. Sita was in the cruel grip of Ravana and pined away in some nameless dungeon. The day passed when Sugriva should have kept his word. The hope that had sustained Raghava till then through many a night of care and anxiety was now but a dead sea fruit. Grief and gloom overmastered him and he fainted right away. But a strong and powerful mind asserted itself and brought him back to the world of sorrow and disappointment. He poured forth his soul in wild laments for Sita, whose image forever filled his heart. He sat him down on one of the peaks of Mount Rishimukha, adorned with many an oar, and gazed vacantly at the clear skies lit by the autumn moon, only to be haunted again by the memories of his lost love. The cloudless skies and the joyful swans but sharpened his grief, and he gave loud vent to it in passionate words and pitiful. Sita used to mimic the cries of the Chatuka birds about the ashrama. Ah, what tortures, what agonies might she not undergo now at the hands of the Rakshasas. My love used to behold along with me the asana trees with golden flowers. Ah, how her heart is torn with grief to behold them now and in my absence. My sweetheart used to be roused from her light slumbers by the melodious cries of the swans. Where does she sleep now, and what breaks in upon her fitful rest? My darling would eagerly look for my return along the woodland paths, her passion fanned by the plaintive cries of her playmates, the Chakravakas. How could she manage to live now, torn from my side? Rivers, lakes, pools, forests, groves, mountains, I have tried them one and all, but gloom and desolation dog my steps everywhere. Surely the cruel god of love could scarce afford to spare Sita, now that she is down with the grief of separation, and he in the flush of his autumnal beauty and strength. So wailed Rama, even as the Chatakas raised dry eyes and parched throats to Indra and pray for the welcome rains. Then Lakshmana happened to return that way from his rambles over the mountain slopes in search for roots and fruits. He saw his heroic brother sitting all alone in a fit of deep gloom and hopeless despondency. His heart reflected the black despair, and he hastened to offer his consolations. My noble brother, passion holds you in its merciless grip and robs you of your native manliness and fortitude. What avails you to sit listless with folded hands when you should busy yourself with the arrangements to organize a search for Sita? Verily, this is the right moment for you to collect and concentrate all your energy, all your strength, and put forth your valor and spirit. You should utilize to the utmost your perseverance, clear intellect, passionless heart, courage, and resourcefulness. The approach of the favorable occasion to effect your plans, the boundless energy of Sugriva to help you therein, and the incalculable advantages you have secured by your religious observances, meditations, and exhaustless store of merit. None dare even dream of Sita, who is ever inseparable from you. Who would clasp in fond embrace the red flames and escape being scorched? Rama took heart from his brother's consolations, for they were sweet, beneficial, and true. You are right in reminding me that I should bestir myself. I should put forth my strength, energy, and perseverance to meet my foe and crush him. The work that lies before us is almost impossible, and the reward that lies at the end of it is more precious to me than everything. So, let us take counsel as to the measures we are to adopt to ensure success. But treacherous memory flashed again before him the picture of Sita, and with worn face and halting speech, he descanted on the cruel beauty of autumn. Now the task of Indra is over. The rains have deluged the earth and brought forth a luxurious growth of plants and herbs. The huge clouds that blotted the waters from view, dark as the petals of the Utpala, have poured themselves forth upon mountains and trees and lie faint, pale and exhausted. Like lordly elephants that drag the weary steps and slow when the rut is no more upon them. The winds and gales are now laid at rest, that erstwhile blew cool with refreshing raindrops and sweet with the fragrance of flowers. Silent are the voices of clouds, elephants, peacocks and torrents. The mountains have been washed clean by continual heavy showers and are, as it were, covered with curious patterns of sandal paste through the sheen of various ores. The rivers run low in autumn and reveal by degrees the shoals of sand beneath. Do they not remind you of young damsels who are extremely unwilling to expose their beauties when they first taste of the sweets of love with their lovers? Now does autumn divide his beauty among the Saptaparna trees, the splendor of the sun, moon and the stars, and the graceful sports of the lordly elephants. And now it is reflected in the lotus pools, carpeted thick with flowers that open their lips to welcome the Lord of Day. The strong fragrance of the Saptaparna flowers blends itself with the hum of innumerable bees and impregnate the air, maddening the elephants in rut. Swans and the Chakravakas betook themselves to other lands during the rains and have now come back. They gaily dance and disport themselves on the shoals with outspread wings covered with the pollen of the lotus. The beauty of the season is centered in elephants and rut, proud bowls and streams of crystal water. The peacocks shed their beautiful feathers and gaze listlessly at the clear skies. They are not very pretty to behold and wear an anxious look, now that the mad passion has died out of their hearts. The golden hue of the asana trees charms the eye as they bend low under the weight of fragrant flowers. Slow and weary are the footsteps of the elephants that sported themselves gaily through the woods with their mates, maddened by the heavy scent of the Saptaparna flowers and ever on the search of their favorite lotus pools. The cloudless sky shines like a sharpened sword. Rivers run low and gently. The wind blows cool through the banks of the Kalahara flowers. The waters have divested themselves of their dark pall and shine in all their beauty. The mire and the slush have dried up under the fierce rays of the sun and sends up a cloud of dust. Kings have resumed their enmities, jealousies, and intrigues, and prepare for fresh expeditions. Bulls take on a fresh beauty and splendor under the influence of autumn, and intoxicated with delight and pride, roar from amidst the cows with dusty flanks, challenging their rivals to fight. The cow elephants follow close after their bull with passionate hearts as it takes its way through the forest with slow and careless gait of one in deep love. Peacocks have shed their beautiful feathers and walk with cowed spirits, their pride quelled by the fierce swans along the river. Elephants agitate and churn the lotus pools and drink of the muddy waters, their roars causing clouds of waterfowl to take a rapid flight. Rivers run clear and free of mire. Shoals lift their heads here and there. Herds of kine browse on the banks. Sarasa birds cry melodiously. The swans resort to these haunts in delight. Rivers, clouds, cataracts, gales, peacocks, and frogs are phenomenally silent. Serpents of various hue that lay coiled in their holes during the rains, observing a strict fast, now glide forth in search of prey, lean, ravenously hungry, and hissing in the pride of their terrible venom. Lady Twilight feels the soft touch of the moon, her lover, and fainting almost with joy, casts sly glances at him out of the corner of her starry eyes and allows her garments to drop from her limbs in the delirium of passion. Now doth Lady Night walk in all her beauty, her snow-white garments the woven moonlight, her eyes the stars, and her face the orbed moon. Swans course fast through the sky with ears of rice dangling from their beaks and look like garlands of flowers tossed by the winds. The waters and the deep pools are charming to look at with their sleeping swans and blown kumudas, like the moonlit, starry, clear sky. Sheets of crystal water are adorned with girdles of swans and chaplets of blown lotus, kumuda, and kalahara, like young girls gaily decked. The sounds of the milkmaids churning busily, of cows lowing for their calves, and of bulls bellowing with passion and wrath are intensified by the strong winds and notes of the flutes of the cowherds. The pale tuft of flowers that crown the slender reeds on the river banks gently sway under the influence of the breeze and remind us of willowy maidens dressed in spotless white. The busy bees cluster around the honey-dripping trees. Maddened by too frequent drafts, they chase the fleet gales and are heavily laden with the bright pollen of the lotus. Shoals of fish move gently across the rivers like waistbands curiously wrought. Does it not remind one of the charming courtesans who spend the night with their lovers and at daybreak wend their way home with tired steps and slow? The crystal waters are lucid and transparent. Lilies put forth their bloom, the golden ears of corn weigh down the thin stalks. Herons call to each other in joy. The gentle breeze lulls one to sleep. The moon rides across the starry heavens, robed in spotless white. These and many other signs indicate that we have left behind us the season of the rains and have entered the realms of its successor. The river mouths are even like unto noble dames with their bright faces embroidered with the delicate figures in Gorochana. For the Chakravaka birds that disport on it form curious ever-changing figures that lend color to the illusion. The dark green moss that spreads over the current recalls to us the memory of the skillful designs painted over the breasts of brides in diverse colors. While the white clusters that crown the tall reeds seem from afar like dresses of dazzling white. The god of love ranges loose over the woods, bright with blown flowers and pleasant with the murmuring of the innumerable bees, with his full equipment of bows and arrows. Of a truth, he is out for no gentle task. The dark clouds have discharged their welcome rains over a grateful earth. The rivers and the lakes overflow with bounteous gifts. The earth puts forth her bright garb of green and emerald. Their duty thus accomplished, they vanished from the skies like a benefactor who chooses to efface himself. The clear waters in the river are hidden under the troops of Chakravakas and resound with gay laughter of the Kurani birds. The lofty hillsides are lined with tall sentinel-like asanas, saptaparnas, kovidaras, bandajivas, and other leafy monarchs of the forests with crowns and diadems of variegated flowers. The sandbanks that dot the riverbeds are entirely hidden under the crowds of swans, chakravakas, kuranis, and sarasas. Ambitious rulers now bethink themselves of their hereditary feuds and take steps to work their wrath on their foes. But Sugriva is to be seen nowhere, nor do I know what steps he has taken with reference to his promise to me. I pine away under the grief of being torn from the arms of my beloved, who obstinately refused to stay behind in spite of all my arguments, prayers, and entreaties, and followed me even to the dark, dreadful depths of Dandaka, like the Chakravaka that follows cheerfully where her mate might lead her. to me, tortured thus. These 4 rainy months moved with leaden feet like thousands of years. Exiled from my home, deprived of my crown, and robbed of my beloved, my heart is racked with pain and grief unspeakable. Yet, His Majesty Sugriva has no pity for me. He should have thought, His kingdom has been rudely snatched away from His grasp. He is helpless, dejected, and is a slave to His mad love for His wife. He is leagues and leagues away from His home and hearth. He has drawn upon Himself the terrible wrath of Ravana, and He has sought me in refuge. Even thus, this black-hearted ruler of the monkey realms views my case and insults me at will. He gave me His word, sacred and solemn, that He would seek far and near and find for me my beloved. He has accomplished His purpose, but the day of action lies far behind Him. Yet He is supremely unconscious of it. Go thou to Kishkindha, seek Him out even in His innermost retreat, and give Him my message even as I tell you. The fool, sunk in the depths of low pleasures and light, should hear from you the following words, bitter but true. Those from whom one has derived countless benefits in the past are, by a freak of fortune, handed over to the tender mercies of adversity. They deign to seek the help of those whom they benefited once. They are deluded with cheap promises and glowing expressions of eternal gratitude. But there it ends. Their hearts are sick with hopes deferred and expectations blasted. Now, such a one is the lowest of the low in the whole creation. But he who fulfills his promise, come what may, is verily the Lord of creation. Foul vultures and unclean beasts turn away in disgust from the corpses of such as return in gratitude to those that saved them from danger and sorrow. Speak to him this my message, straight and clear. Does his heart yearn to see me stand before him with my terrible bow, wrought with gold, bent to stay? And does he desire to hear the thunders of my bowstring? Full well does he know more than others what my prowess can do. Full well does he know that you and your matchless might stand by my side. Wonder of wonders, he has clean forgotten it and basks in the sun of fancied security. Maybe he remembers not that I sought his friendship, that I slew Vali for no other reason than that his brother should aid me in finding out my beloved. Well, I have carried out my promise to him. He has all he wants. Why should he look further? Of course, he gave me his plighted word that he would begin his search for Sita after the rains. But wine and women have wrought their will upon him, and these 4 gloomy months have passed over him like a golden flash of lightning. His ministers, his kith and kin surround him. He makes up for his past privations and hardships by drowning himself in wine and honey. Surely there is no place in his heart nor memory for such a poor, miserable waif as myself. My dear boy, go thou to Sugriva straight from here. Make him realize who I am. Impress upon him what he has gained through me. Give him a faint idea of what my wrath can do. Say to him, the path yet lies open and free along which my arrow led your brother Vali unto the halls of Yama. I know not that it is closed. Sugriva, stand by your word. Do not follow your brother Vali on the path of death. My wrath consumed but a single monkey. My shafts drank the heart blood of a single ranger of the woods. But should you dare to go back upon your word, I will blot out the monkey race from creation. You, your kin, your friends, your ministers, your subjects will be but a thing of the past. Say so, even as I bid you, and you may add anything that seems to you fit and apt. We have already lost much precious time. Hurry now, and speak from me to that fool of a monkey for the last time. Thou poor monarch of a poor race, make your heart bright with the light of eternal dharma. Remember your promise to me. Carry it out unto your best. Seek not to embrace my keen and cruel shafts. Take it not into your head to start on a journey to the realms of death and darkness. Hope not to meet your brother Vali, even where he is now. Lakshmana watched his brother's wrath grow like a wildfire, yet his grief and desolation was painful to see. Of terrible might and dauntless heart himself, Lakshmana resolved in his heart to punish Sugriva so cruelly that he would never forget it. Mangalam Kushlendraya Mahaniya Gunavte Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarvabhaumaya Mangalam.